This is the Wrestling Pulsecast. Please call 818-532-9786 with any questions or comments for your host throughout the show.
Welcome to the HTC Hitting the Canvas Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. It is Monday night, February 2nd. I will be taking over your hosting duties tonight. Justin Sawalka here leading the show tonight. Joined by, as always, as with my fellow co-host, Matt Herrick. Matt, how's it going tonight?
Okay. Coming back on with the flu. So that's why you're going to be taking over most of the talking.
All right, sounds good. And last week, you kind of said, last week I had a 24-hour bout of a stomach flu. So apparently Mondays haven't been good to us the last couple of weeks. Although you, I guess, are kind of celebrating the Patriots' last-second win of the Super Bowl last night. So your sports teams have a little bit of string of luck going here with Ohio State winning the national championship and now the Patriots winning the Super Bowl yesterday. So maybe something will be looking up for you in the near future.
Yeah, it was a nice little change of pace. I have to admit, when Kurse made the catch while on his ass and the ball just fell into his lap, kind of figured that this was going to be another David Tyree moment, but it kind of played out well. It granted, Pete Carroll made a horrible, horrible call and went for a pass on the half-yard line, but hey, I'm not a Seahawks fan, so it worked out well for me.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll be able to know what that feels like to have my sports teams win championships. But on to wrestling matters at hand. It's been a couple weeks since we were on last Monday with Matt coming back from the Royal Rumble, and obviously I couldn't have been on because, like I said, I was sick last Monday. So we have obviously a lot to go through here today, talking about just the Royal Rumble in general, and obviously with last week's Raw being canceled, we got some unique sit-down interviews from a lot of stars, stuff that we haven't really seen on TV much recently in WWE. We know we have Triple H, who has his normal Wednesday sit-downs with Michael Cole. But it was I watched some of it. I didn't really watch all of it, but it was a different kind of perspective that it was kind of worked in the way that it worked. And then we had the live SmackDown this past Thursday, and then obviously Raw this Monday, with some other things kind of sprinkled in between. So I guess starting going all the way back from last Sunday, the Royal Rumble is kind of pretty much where we should be starting. I know Matt was there live, and he'll give his thoughts after. I think in overall show-wise, I would have to say watching it on the network, it was kind of thumbs in the middle-ish, more toward leaning down. I think obviously the WWE title match was a very, very good match. There was good storytelling involved. I thought all three men in that match played their parts really well. Seth Rollins once again came out looking like a star when he's already in there with two of the bigger stars in wrestling. So props to Seth Rollins for coming out looking great in that. I thought John Cena played his part well in it. You know, he kind of was, him and Seth Rollins carried the most of the match while Brock Lesnar was down selling his injury. And then Lesnar himself looked like a beast coming back from playing up the rib injury on TV and then having him come out and just basically destroy Rollins and Cena after getting up from F5s, getting up from curb stomps, from Money in the Bank shots, Money in the Bank briefcase shots to the head. I thought Lesnar looked unstoppable, and it makes you wish watching a match like that that Lesnar was around on TV more and we could get more performances like that. I thought Lesnar, since he's come back from January to up until the Rumble and including Rumble and then last week on Raw, I thought his appearances have been very well done. And if the WWE was only willing to pay his appearance fee more, maybe we could have actually gotten to see more of this on TV during his reign as champion. So I thought the title match was great. You know, the undercard matches were just all right. They didn't really stand out or anything. I kind of figured the Usos would be winning. The Ascension needed to get their win back from the New Day or from the New Age Outlaws, so that happened. The Divas match was the Divas match. The Rumble itself, I thought, they tried to get all of the fun stuff out of the way in the beginning, it seemed like. You had EDP's appearance, you had the Boogeyman, you had Bubba Ray Dudley's appearance, all happened in the very first half, or the first half of the Royal Rumble, with Daniel Bryan out there. And then it seems like, obviously, Matt will expand on that more because he was there, but obviously, watching it on the network, after Daniel Bryan got eliminated pretty much at the halfway point of the Royal Rumble, everything just kind of went downhill from there. Nothing memorable really stood out from that point, obviously, outside of The Rock showing up at the end. So the Rumble match itself, I think, was kind of, the first half was well done with its surprises and had its moments, and then the second half of the match kind of just didn't really have a good flow to it for me. I thought everything just didn't seem to mesh well together. And then, of course, you have Roman Reigns winning, and you have Big Show and Kane being in the final four, which to me just shouldn't be. I don't care if they're the Authority's goons or not. That's just, those guys shouldn't be in the final four of the Royal Rumble in 2015 when they've almost both been around the business 20-plus years. So as far as Roman Reigns winning, as I said, I think, on the preview show, and I've probably said on the show numerous times before, there's a time and a place for Roman Reigns in the future of the WWE. I'm not saying I want him to fail. I have absolutely no problem with saying he's going to be a top star in the WWE in the next five to 10 years. He's going to be a main eventer. He's going to win multiple world championships. And there's a time and a place for him to succeed in the WWE. I just think with Daniel Bryan coming back before the Rumble and them kind of hyping up Bryan's return into the Rumble, making them go through Kane to make sure he even can stay in the Royal Rumble, and then just to kind of have him eliminated as an afterthought during the match. It's not even like he was in the final two or the final four, or he had some kind of, like, shenanigans that caused him to get eliminated, or he was screwed over. He was just kind of eliminated. And to treat your pretty much top guy as far as overness with the fans go like that is just kind of a big slap in the face. You know, he didn't have to win. Roman Reigns winning is fine. It's just the way they ended up going about making Reigns win the Rumble, with Ryan getting eliminated and then the crowd just basically crapping on the match because they knew now that Reigns was going to be forced down their throats. And the way they kind of just, they didn't make Reigns look stronger. Like, he's had, like, I think Stone Cold pointed out on a podcast, where he's kind of times rusted in the corner, not doing anything. If you want Roman Reigns to look strong in the Rumble, you just have him come in there and destroy people. Kind of like almost what Bray Wyatt did early in the match, and have him go one-on-one people and just take them out just like that. But of course, people knew the Reigns thing was coming in the last couple weeks going into the Rumble, so he was already kind of put in a bad spot as it is. Roman Reigns has, to me, been screwed up as far as booking-wise goes since his return from injury. He's a guy, type of guy who should be getting a Goldberg-like push. You know, you give him the power moves, you make his matches short and to the point, and make him dominant throughout them. You don't make him talk long in his promos, as we've seen already. He gives a long-winded promo, doesn't deliver, and it doesn't come off that strong. It doesn't matter who's writing it. Whoever's writing his promos should be keeping them short, to the point, not even longer than like 30 seconds, if that. Just have him go out there and wreck people and build them up as a dominant monster to go up against the dominant beast, Brock Lesnar, at WrestleMania. But now the WWE is in a situation where, once again, they have their entire main event of WrestleMania with Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar looking like it could backfire, but there's going to be a strong backlash, kind of similar to what happened last year with Batista and Randy Orton. But this year, it seems like they're hell-bent on making this work. It seems like, from Raw, Paul Heyman is hell-bent on making this work with his promo. So I guess we're just going to have to go along with the ride and see with what happens. I have my thoughts about how it could be booked, but we're still just kind of on the Royal Rumble right now. So, like I said, to me, Rumble was thumbs in the middle, more toward leaning down, and that's mostly because, like I said, the WWE title match I thought was a very strong triple threat. I don't want to say it was as good as Angle, Michaels, Benoit from WrestleMania, but it was definitely a very strong storytelling match. So those are my thoughts on the Rumble. Matt, you were there live. You kind of probably have a different perspective than me, who was watching it on TV with friends and just listening from what you could hear over the audio on the network. So what were your thoughts on the Rumble Live? What was your weekend like? What did you think of the crowd reaction and just your overall thoughts on the show?
Well, what was interesting, and you got to for people listening to, if you haven't seen my review of the show or any of the coverage I did for the show, check it out at hccwrestling.com. What was interesting when we walked into it, and from my perspective, is that, one, I had never been to a Rumble, so it was all new to me. And two, I don't like Philadelphia. Not even in the slightest sense of the word. Partly because I'm a New York Mets fan, so I've been to Philadelphia Phillies games at Citizens Bank Park Field before, and it's not fun. I don't like their fans. So I was very apprehensive to mingle with Philly fans going into the Royal Rumble. That said, they were great. I thought the arena was fantastic. Like a lot of the comments online, though, and what a lot of people are posting, and what seems to be a common knowledge for a lot of people, is that Philly has a lot of smart fans. And to me, there being there and talking to people and listening in on conversations and things of that nature, there were a lot of fans that were very engaged with the product. There were a lot of fans that were wrestling fans, but there weren't a lot of quote unquote smart fans. Yes, you're going to hear some of those around, and especially on TV. One of the big things was coming back and watching the show and hearing the boos for Roman Reigns and everything else. Yeah, you heard those at the arena. They weren't nearly as loud at the arena as they were on TV. There was a lot more cheers mixed into those boos. So it seemed more that there were a lot more WWE fans than there were smart fans of people thinking that he's getting pushed too soon or that he's not ready or there's somebody else that should be in his spot. It wasn't really boos of that nature with that behind it. It was a lot more of these people came to the arena to watch Daniel Bryan win. Like, he just came back from injury, and they were excited to see a guy that they liked win. Purely storyline, purely black and white, simple, this is their guy, they like him, they want him as the WWE champion, so they're going to boo when he gets eliminated. That's what the feeling was. The majority of the people that I heard speaking and the groups that I put in myself into and I talked to. If it wasn't that, you got these little sections of people who felt that or who had seen that The Rock was coming back and coming that night, or if they had heard that Vince McMahon had taken over Roman Reigns' promos, things of that nature. But it wasn't a lot, like barely any that I could see. Definitely not enough to translate on television. So reading the reviews of the show, of course when I was there, I knew that's what was going to come through on television while watching the Rumble. I knew that's what could happen because that's what was going through in my head. I'm watching it and like, okay, Big Show and Kane, and I'm sitting there with my wife and we're watching the people come down, and I'm telling her, I'm like, they have Ziggler left. That's the last one that people can get excited for all over the rest of all over the entire product. And of course, then the two veterans just laid waste to all the young guys. And yeah, it was a problem. I mean, it was a blatant and just glaring issue. And what seemed to be the big problem with the Royal Rumble match itself was that they didn't either they didn't book on the fly or they tried to fix it too much. It kind of seemed it was tinkered a lot. Whether it was tinkered in the beginning or tinkered as it was going on, either way, I think I've read more that it was tinkered as it was going on. It wasn't cohesive. Like you said, there was definitely a half mark in the match, and that was when Daniel Bryan was eliminated because it was all it just worked out that way where as soon as he was eliminated, I think it was one or two guys, and then Reigns came in. So that was just bad luck. And on top of it all, it was that segmented where, of course, you always have little spots in the Rumble that usually play out throughout the entire hour. You have storylines going forward. But there weren't any storylines happening in the Rumble. There was little Rumble spots. Like you said, there is the Boogeyman spot. There was the Bray Wyatt somewhat story, but there wasn't really anything to that. There was Bubba Ray coming back for all of 3 minutes, DDP making a little Legends appearance. There wasn't anything that will carry over after that except for Daniel Bryan being eliminated and whatever happens with Roman Reigns and the Authority and what's going on tonight. That's rare for the Rumble. Usually there's either two or three things going on in the match that they can at least branch off of from there and we can talk about after that. It didn't happen this year. That was an issue that was very obvious even in the arena while the match was going on. As far as the whole show goes, though, as far as the show overall, I would say it was good. I know you gave it thumbs in the middle for seeing it on the network, and I can understand that. I went back and watched it. And what I found interesting is that watching the pay-per-view without the kickoff match of Cesaro and Kidd versus the New Day of Kofi and Big E, without having that match inserted into the pay-per-view, it really took away from the pay-per-view. Because if you have that match in there, you have that match, you have the triple threat match, and then you have a good part of the Rumble all being good, with the title match being very good and that tag team match being very good. And then, I mean, the tag team championship match was good. It was a lot that we've seen before, but it was still good. And then the Divas match was whatever. And then the Legend, the New Age Outlaws Ascension match was. So having that one extra match in there really does make a difference. So I think watching it live made that difference. It was all one seamless thing to us. It wasn't segmented. It wasn't broken off. We watched the whole thing as a hunk. So putting it all together, I felt it was a good pay-per-view. I felt it was a good show. I feel awful that this entire show is now going to be looked down upon because of what happened at the end of the Rumble. And like you were saying before, if you're going to put Roman Reigns in there and you want him to win, yeah, he was taking a nap a few times and he was just sitting in the corner. And I know Steve Austin had something to say, but yeah, remember, Steve Austin did it a few years too. His first two Rumble wins, one, he dominated it in that middle section, but they let him dominate in that middle section. And the next one, he just kept getting beat up by everybody because there was something going on. And that doesn't even count the 1999 Rumble where he fought McMahon and then he was taken out to the hospital for half the match. So Steve Austin could kind of have selective memory sometimes when it comes to some of his matches. But I give him credit in the fact that, yeah, Reigns could have been doing more, but he also wasn't booked to do more. He was inserted into a part of the match where there's just three or four other guys, and it kind of stayed that way. He threw out a few people, Bray Wyatt threw out a few people, Rusev, so it just kind of stayed in that generic punch, kick, move around section. He wasn't given a real section to shine in. And I think if he was given a spot like the Bray Wyatt spot or even last year where he was able to break Kane's record and was given all these eliminations, and there would be even more of a backlash onto it than there is now. Maybe the only way to save that would be have him and Daniel Bryan be the last to square it off, but then you're in a lose-lose. I mean, he either throws him out because you want him to win, or you don't have Daniel Bryan like even come close to him, and we're in the position where we are now. It kind of seems like they got Bryan out of there before Reigns was there, so there was no cross-section of negativity. Like, they wanted to keep them separate because they were hoping that might be the best solution. It obviously wasn't, but they really had no way to go with it. They wanted Reigns to win, which is what I predicted. I still thought that they were going to go with Roman Reigns through the Rumble. Granted, now that I've read what and heard what he said on the Sam Roberts podcast, I'm a little hesitant about this guy. But and I'm not surprised they went the way they did. It was the fact that they had to bring The Rock in, it was very telling of that they know what's going on. They know what the fans are saying. But they're trying to fix it, and it's not working. They're trying all the tricks that have always worked in the years before, and they're not going to work this year. And they don't know why yet. So that's, I think, their mentality and why we're not seeing any real changes. They want to stay the course, and they're trying to make things fit into that course so they don't have to change WrestleMania plans. They don't have to change their booking plans. They don't have to change their company outlook. They have a lot invested in going to WrestleMania 31, because if they're losing Brock Lesnar right after WrestleMania 31 and they have no other part-timers, because it doesn't look like they're going to have anybody else after WrestleMania, then they're looking at strong card guys that are upper mid-card right now to headline the shows for the rest of the year. So they have to start building them now. So that's being building Bray Wyatt. That means building Roman Reigns and building Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, all those guys, getting them up there so they can headline a pay-per-view. And they can't really, like people are saying, is take Reigns out and throw Bryan in, because they're certain Bryan can do it. They know Bryan can be in the main event. But they need more than him. You can't just have one guy working with John Cena or Randy Orton for the next 12 months. We've seen that before. People hated that then, too. So get as many people up to that level as possible. And if it's already been planned out that Reigns is going to be the figurehead and they're going to build around him, then it takes a lot to change that momentum. I give them credit for trying to stay the course and try to find different avenues to help strengthen your stance. But again, right now it's not really working. I thought the Rumble was better than what some people are saying it was, but again, I was there. I know it's a totally different experience for anybody when you're at an event compared to if you're not. Just look at our experience for WrestleMania 29. So I get that, but this is all a booking choice. So, yeah, if you don't like it because you're a fan, okay. Don't get on the company for it. It's like, if you don't like it, you don't like it. We get it. Watch Daniel Bryan. Watch what his storyline's going to be. There's more than just one storyline on television. And for all you people out there who are complaining about Roman Reigns, it's not John Cena. We're not seeing Cena and Randy Orton again. We're not seeing a Cena Triple H match at WrestleMania or Cena Sheamus. We're going to see something different. We're not seeing Cena Brock Lesnar again or Cena Rock again. We're getting something different. So at least be happy for that, if nothing else.
Yeah, and that's kind of my, you know, whole, as far as, you know, looking at Roman Reigns, I'm saying, I keep telling people, it's somebody different. You know, these would be the same people where if they decided at the last minute that they didn't like the idea of Reigns winning and they were hesitant to pull the trigger and they would have thrown Cena in instead, people would have been complaining about that and how, you know, the internet really needs to make up its mind. You know, we have people complaining all the time about how they want new stars and they need new stars and they can't have Cena and Orton and Brock Lesnar's headlining shows all the time. And then when it's not their guy that they want to be a new star, when the internet's like, well, it's not Dean Ambrose or Dolph Ziggler or, you know, whoever, Cesaro, and they pick somebody else, they just automatically turn on them. And then, you know, people wonder why they sometimes wrestling fans get a bad rap. And then this is why. You get your new star in Roman Reigns. He hasn't even been given a chance. He's been barely a singles wrestler. When you take off the time that he missed from injury, he's been a singles wrestler for barely 6 months, and you're already anointing him the next John Cena and saying that he's just going to be a giant flop. How do you know that? You do not know that at all without giving somebody a shot. And as disappointed as I am that Daniel Bryan didn't win the Royal Rumble, and I think it would have been a better story if it was Bryan Lesnar, I'm willing to give Roman Reigns a shot to take the ball and see where it goes. And part of the reason I say that is because I really do think, and I don't know how Seth Rollins is going to factor into this, I think even with that promo from Monday between Heyman and Lesnar and Reigns, that they kind of are hinting at maybe possibly turning Reigns and aligning him with Paul Heyman. It's something I could see play out down the line, with especially if Lesnar leaves and you want to keep Heyman on TV. Now, of course, they tried this last WrestleMania with Cesaro, and that kind of backfired. But you got to remember, with Cesaro, they had somebody who was red hot, ready for a face turn, and gave him a heel manager in Paul Heyman, and it just didn't mesh well. You know, you had a good wrestler and who needed somebody to talk for him, so you give him Heyman, but their character-wise, they just didn't work well with each other. Whereas if you take Roman Reigns and turn him heel and have Paul Heyman be his manager, you're looking at Heyman doing all this talking and Reigns playing a Lesnar-esque character. He's not obviously Brock Lesnar, but he could pretty much turn into somebody who's this guy that just starts kicking people's asses, doesn't do any talking. He has Paul Heyman do all the talking for him. And then you just look. The WWE right now is in need of heels. I mean, you want to build up Bray Wyatt, that's fine. You want to build up Rusev, that's fine. You know, you have Seth Rollins, who is pretty much the top guy right now as far as full-time heels go. But if you turn Reigns heel, you can have John Cena. You can have Dean Ambrose step up. You got Daniel Bryan then. Then you're perfect in after WrestleMania. If you're leaving Brock Lesnar and you turn Roman Reigns, you can jump right into a Daniel Bryan Roman Reigns program and have that carry your TV for the next couple months leading into the summer. You got somebody like a Dolph Ziggler you can push up the card if he keeps getting the reactions that he's getting. I think, and then in that scenario, if you want to turn Roman Reigns heel and you want to flip-flop him and Seth Rollins, you could probably pull that off too if you really want, because I think Seth Rollins is somebody that once his heel character has kind of run its course, and I think once he's ready for a face turn again, it's going to work really well depending on how it ends up being booked. So part of me is thinking that with this Roman Reigns win, if you continue to get that backlash, and I know you mentioned the one interview, Matt. I don't know. I saw quotes from one today where he kind of was talking about how he invented the Superman punch and took the spear and made it into something of his own and it just kind of trying to talk himself up.
I have not heard that one. No, the one I heard today was talking about his critics and saying that they kept most of them wouldn't even know how to lock up with me if I allowed them to. And then in the end of the day, it's the company that makes the decisions, and I'm just a guy sitting back and getting rich. So obviously he's going to ruffle a couple feathers with that, and it's not a very good PR move.
No, and that kind of sounds like to me somebody who is ready for a heel turn. Let me see if I can find that interview quote that I did real quick while I'm talking here. But that's why, like I said, it just seems like they're setting up for something, a Roman Reigns like heel turn after WrestleMania. Okay, let's see. It was the same Sam Roberts. It was still the same Sam Roberts interview that he did. Let me scroll through here real quick. By the way, while I'm doing this, if you're out there and you want to give us a call, give us your thoughts on the Royal Rumble and, you know, chime in. Do you agree with Reigns winning? Do you don't? Would you rather have seen Daniel Bryan? If you're out there listening, the number is 818-532-9786. If you want to give us your thoughts on the Rumble and the road to WrestleMania. Okay, here's the quote, I guess, from that same interview. He says, "My goal is hopefully to make everyone happy and be satisfied with the product that I've created. People don't realize is I created a product, the Superman Punch, and taken a spear and made it my own. There's a lot of things that I've done that I've created, so there's a lot of opinions that I have that I'm not going to budge on." That kind of comes off to me as the same kind of thing as the one you just mentioned about making money, and, you know, maybe this guy will have an edge to him if the fans keep booing him. And you know what? I think that's great. If the fans revolting against him and, you know, not wanting to see him on top, give him the edge he needs to get confident in his promos and become kind of a main event talent going forward, I'm all for that, especially, as you pointed out, the Rumble, the fact that The Rock had came in, even The Rock, you know, raising his hand at the end, still was getting him booed, makes me think, I don't know if this guy will ever be over in the face. I think it'll be interesting kind of to see what happens tonight as far as his reaction goes. I mean, on SmackDown this past Thursday, he was still getting some boos, but it wasn't as strong as what it was at the Rumble. So I'll be interested to see, what his reaction is, the crowd reaction he gets tonight from, I think they're in Denver, which isn't really like a Philadelphia or a New York City or a Chicago-like crowd as far as their boos go. So I'll be interested to see what happens with him tonight on Raw. But what do you think, Matt, of a possible Roman Reigns heel turn and alliance with Paul Heyman after WrestleMania, especially if Brock Lesnar is leaving and they want to keep Paul Heyman on TV?
Turning Roman Reigns, while it might sound good right now, might be a little dicey. It worked really well with his cousin. But if you're looking at it just in the fact of, or just look at the facts that we have right now, Vince McMahon is writing all his scripts. Vince McMahon loves him. Vince McMahon wants him to be the top guy in the company. If he turns him heel and decides, if they turn him heel and go with him going forward, it doesn't really make much sense. Because Vince McMahon has been wanting a Superman cartoon hero figure that can replace John Cena. Actually, not really replace just yet, but hopefully be the heir to the throne, almost. So, turning Roman Reigns heel, I don't think Vince McMahon feels there's another person on the horizon that can do that. Of course, there is Dean Ambrose, obviously. Doesn't look like Vince McMahon will want to put him at the very forefront for a John Cena type push. I could see him having a Randy Orton style career where he is a top guy for most of his career, but it's always kind of that 1B to a 1A. Seth Rollins, I could see being a top guy, but I don't know if he'll be a figurehead of the company. He doesn't really fit any mold that the WWE has ever showcased. So it would be interesting if he does kind of break through and is able to carry the ball for them. But right now there's not really anybody that I think, they would be comfortable with to supplant or to be number two to rank number one. They're going to have, like I said, they're going to have Randy Orton, they're going to have John Cena, and they're going to have all these other supporting characters. But at the end of Randy Orton's career, they need somebody that can be that babyface. They can be that Hulk Hogan figure for them. And if they turn Reigns this early, I think they might be shooting themselves in the foot with him. This recent interview with Sam Roberts is not a good sign. I'm hoping it's one aberration and just a whole slew of interviews that it's just being blown out of proportion. He just had a bad day or whatever it may be, and he doesn't really feel this way, or things were taken out of context. Who knows? But if he does feel this way, I'm surprised The Rock is giving him his seal of approval so willingly. The Rock is very much a man who wants people to earn everything that they get and very much believes in hard work. Hell, he has a new TV show that's all about that and earning what people want to be in their lives. So for somebody to say that they invented and make silly claims like he did, they really are just silly. I think the Rock would laugh those off and have them just try to get his head on straight before he even considered putting him over. That being said, he did do it. He helped him out he tried to help him out a ton at the Royal Rumble. And obviously, it didn't work so well. The Rock even said it himself that Philly blew the hell out of him. But he still did it. So it makes me feel that Reigns might not be as bad as this interview suggests. I hope that's the case. But if that's also the case, he should not be turning heel. He should be the guy that you look at as the Hulk Hogan, because he can have that presence. I can absolutely, I can see the old Hulk Hogan montages of him walking down a Sunset Strip with just 90 kids surrounding him. And I can mentally supplant Roman Reigns in that position instead of Hulk Hogan, and he would fit perfectly. He's a big guy. He's good looking. He dresses cool. He's got a fun moves. He does a lot that he's built like an action figure. He's everything that little kids want to see in a wrestler. So turning him and having him be a heel, I think would, especially this early in his career, would do a lot more damage than good. It's not like Brock Lesnar, who came in as a heel and then they were able to turn him babyface because he was so dominant and he was so good. This is a guy that they're trying to get over as badly as possible as a cartoon character and as the top superhero of the company. For them to just throw that away and say, oh, no, I'm aligning myself with Lex Luthor, and we're just going to take apart the entire WWE. Not one, you're going to destroy a lot of your children's fan base, and two, you're just giving in to all of the fans saying Reigns isn't cut out for it yet, and we need John Cena to come in and take him down, because there's not going to be another babyface that's going to come in and beat him. It's going to be John Cena. They're not going to get Daniel Bryan. I'm sorry. People who are thinking that it could be Daniel Bryan that comes in and supplants Roman Reigns, it's not going to happen. There's no way WWE is going to just say, oh, yeah, we screwed up. Oh, we should go with Bryan full board. All right, we'll have him beat our former top guy. There's no way in hell that's ever going to happen. Anybody's ego is too big to give up that much. So having him go heel, it's asking for a lot more trouble than I think that they need right now. And it's probably best to go with the babyface route and try to get the right balance of him still being a good guy, but also being cool enough that males like him. And I think part of that is just getting Vince McMahon away from him, get him out of his ear, stop him from telling him what to say, and you might see something different. But right now, we're not seeing anything good, and that's blatantly obvious. It's got to change soon, but I don't think a heel route is the way to go.
Yeah, I think we can both agree that, you know, Roman Reigns is going to be somebody who is going to have been, he's going to be given the ball at WrestleMania, and we really don't know how it's going to work out. I mean, unlike Batista at WrestleMania 21, who had a very hot storyline going into it. John Cena was more over, I think, at WrestleMania 20 than he was at WrestleMania 21 by the time he won the title. He was still over, but I think he was more over a year earlier. He doesn't really have a hot storyline going into it, which is why I'm interested to see where they go with Reigns and Lesnar and Paul Heyman going forward. You got to imagine that Paul Heyman is going to try to work his magic on the mic and try to do his damnedest to get this program over. And I think he'll do a relatively good job at it. And it'll just be how the crowd adapts to the story and what they go with as far as storyline-wise. Obviously, they played up with that interview from Raw this past Monday with Heyman knowing Reigns' family and that route. But who knows if they'll expand on that in the coming months or if they'll try to take it in a different direction. So we talked about Reigns. You kind of mentioned Daniel Bryan. There's some other bits and pieces as far as leading into the road to WrestleMania that will lead up to matches at WrestleMania that were planted at the Rumble and then with Raw and SmackDown last week. And one of them is the one that we seem to have thought was going to happen, and that is a John Cena Rusev program. After the Royal Rumble, when John Cena was giving an interview on the Fallout show, Rusev came in and interrupted him, seemingly complaining about the Rumble. And then they were separated back. And then on SmackDown this past Thursday, Rusev was out there and John Cena came out, and John Cena cut his normal, lame, childish jokes. And I thought Rusev did a rather good job kind of holding his own in there with Cena, and I thought he didn't look out of place at all. And it's weird because they already have this match now set up for Fastlane. And I believe it was said on the Blizzard show that for some reason they said the Authority had planned on holding this match off until WrestleMania, but then they decided to do it at Fastlane, and I believe it's 3 weeks away. And yeah, February 22nd, same as the Oscars. So we're getting Cena Rusev at Fastlane. One would have to assume that unless they have something else planned for both these guys going into WrestleMania season, that they're also going to have a match at WrestleMania, which is kind of weird, I think, just because you don't really normally see a match that's going to be done at WrestleMania done the month before at the pay-per-view beforehand. But we're getting Rusev, John Cena there at Fastlane. I'm kind of hoping Cena transitions from the childish kind of stuff that he was doing, making lame ho jokes at Lana and other kinds of lame Russian jokes at Rusev, and kind of transitions. I think it'd be easier for him just to do the whole, I'm John Cena, I am a big patriotic supporter of the troops, and you're from Russia, and I hate you. Now, I know that storyline's been done before, but I think with Cena, at least, he's been built up as this big, American troop supporter who goes and shakes all the troops' hands all the time, unlike all these other guys that have fought Rusev. It's just easier to do it that way. So one would have to assume that at Fastlane, you're going to get Rusev winning via some sort of weird shenanigans, that it's not a clean win, and then Cena picks his win back up at WrestleMania. But the question I ask is, if you really want Rusev to get over and you really want Rusev to be this next big dominant heel in your company and be a guy who could be a world title contender down the line at the end of this year, like I predicted on our prediction show, why do you even need to have Cena get his win back? If it was me booking, first of all, I wouldn't have even done this match at Fastlane. I don't know what the point is other than the scenario that I just talked about. I would have Rusev beat John Cena in the middle of the ring. You can start solidifying Rusev. You can push Rusev to Roman Reigns, and if you want to keep Roman Reigns safe, you can do a Rusev-Roman Reigns program if you don't want to jump into Seth Rollins right away. I just think that John Cena at this point of his career, and I know I've said this on this show before, I've written columns about this as far as what John Cena's status should be going forward, but to me, John Cena should be almost like the gatekeeper for younger guys or newer guys who are debuting and getting over and need a push now to get into the main event scene, and fighting somebody like a John Cena and fighting them in a match at WrestleMania or any other pay-per-view and getting a win over him or getting a dominant strong performance over him will help that person take the next step into the main event level. John Cena is somebody who doesn't need to be in a world title program for 3 months or 3 or 4 months now going forward. You want to throw him in like a one-off pay-per-view match or an elimination chamber, anything like that, fine. But John Cena is a 15-time champion. He's in his upper 30s, I believe. He's somebody who, if it was me, I could easily see him starting to work a reduced-ish type schedule in the next couple of years, and I'm not talking about something like a Brock Lesnar or a Batista, or somebody like The Rock when he had his contract, but maybe he takes a month and a half off during the summer or the spring before SummerSlam to rest up some of his more than likely long-term nagging injuries that he has. He's just somebody that doesn't need to be around your title scene anymore, especially like you brought up earlier, Matt, with if Brock Lesnar isn't coming back after WrestleMania, they're not going to have any other part-time guys on the roster. And if you want to start getting guys to be main eventers, you're going to start pushing Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, Rusev, Dolph Ziggler. Get these guys to be more main event acts, and you'll have more top stars to build around going into 2015 and WrestleMania 32 and 2016 going that far. John Cena just needs to be somebody that, like, kind of like last year with Bray Wyatt, except, Bray Wyatt ended up coming out of losing the end of that feud, And it took him now pretty much all of last year to recover from that and get built back up to where he is now going into WrestleMania. So, to me, like I said, I wouldn't do John Cena reset at Fastlane. I would have just completely saved it for WrestleMania. I would have found something else for both men to do, either at that pay-per-view or hell, like I just said, give John Cena the pay-per-view all. Let him recover from the title match and talk about how he needs some time to do whatever, and you can build around Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins for this pay-per-view and then have Cena come back afterwards. But to me, if I'm booking this feud and I want to make the next big heel monster in my company, I am going to have Rusev come out winning both of these matches. If you want to win one by, you know, cheating or shenanigans, whatever, that's fine. But I just think Rusev needs to look strong coming out of this feud with John Cena. But what worries me the most is that it's going to be a repeat of last year with Bray Wyatt, where they trade wins back and forth, Cena comes out on the end, and then it takes, or Cena comes out on top on the end, excuse me, and then it takes Rusev a little bit of time to recover. What about you, Matt? What are your thoughts on the likely Rusev-John Cena program that we're getting this WrestleMania season?
Well, I think the reason why you're seeing it at Fastlane is to get a John Cena beatdown angle. I think you'll see their match go pretty much as planned, where it looks like he'll get some Rusev offense in the middle there, but then it'll look like Cena's coming back for the win, and then Rusev will either cheat or do something, like I said, get disqualified, whatever it may be. And then you'll see him lay him out. And then you get about a week or two of nothing, and you'll have John Cena make a return, and you'll get his rah-rah patriotic John Cena back in against Rusev leading up to WrestleMania win. So they're going to save, and he's going to win at WrestleMania. They're going to save it for WrestleMania, and he's going to win it. It's in L.A. this year. Well, it's not technically in L.A., but it's in California this year. And if you just look at back how they were going to do it in L.A., they were going to do it in the L.A. Coliseum, which went so well. But the main event was Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter, and when Sergeant Slaughter was the Iraqi sympathizer. And the cover of the pay-per-view was Hogan carrying an American flag. So you kind of have to see the parallels here. Granted, that was WrestleMania 7, and we're talking about WrestleMania 31, but it's probably going to happen the exact same way. Not for the title. That's probably the biggest thing, unless they put the U.S. title on the line. Honestly, right now, would not surprise me with everything that's going on. And then just deciding, fuck it, let's throw that title on there. And how else are they going to get the title off of Rusev? But, it's going to be easy. It's going to be an easy storyline to write. It's going to be an easy one to book. I think they're banking on Rusev as being like the top thing that he's going to bring for them is a match against John Cena. So they don't have to worry about if he could be able to survive after a feud with him. The one with Bray Wyatt was different. It felt like they were trying something new. They knew they had a big star with him, and they wanted to try something different with John, and they were going to see what they can do with it. With Rusev, it's like, okay, here is our story. This is a story that's been told since the beginning of wrestling. It's a foreign invader coming in and the franchise and company standing up for it and saying, love it or leave it, and telling them, get out of the country. Oh, and he's going to be the conquering hero. I think that's what Rusev was originally brought in to be. They built him up enough so he can get to that point to face Cena. And I even think that his status of being runner-up, even though he was outside of the ring for the entire match, the Royal Rumble, was give him a little bit more legitimacy for a match against Cena. Afterwards, I don't see, like I said before, and I've said it hundreds of times on the show, I don't see his career going as far as you do. It would be nice if he was able to branch off of this and go into something different, but just looking at the track record, and especially not only the track record of WWE and John Cena opponents, but the track record of guys playing these foreign invader characters. They don't really have staying power, whether it's the man or the character. If you look at Sergeant Slaughter, he's not remembered for being a turncoat. He's remembered for being the G.I. Joe action figure. Iron Sheik was always remembered as a heel, but he never got away from that. And he had one title win and lost it to Hogan. And as much as he wants to say it, he lost to Hogan on purpose. There's only so much you can do with a character like that. And in a lot of fans' minds, as one-dimensional as they are, and it is extremely one-dimensional, it's hard to grow and add more dimensions to that character because people can't really attach any emotion to it for some reason. If you come in with that type of gimmick, it's hard to connect with fans beyond that. Look at even just Cesaro, who came in with a gimmick similar to that. I mean, I think he shot himself in the foot when he started wearing the jacket and the beret and was walking down to the ring or noodling or whatever it may be, and was really distinguishing himself as somebody from a different country coming to America to be better than Americans. That character just does not have growing potential in today's wrestling environment. I mean, it didn't really have it in yesteryear's wrestling environment. The villains were just able to go to different territories to play the different characters, to play the same character. Now it doesn't work, and there's no place for them to go. So if Rusev is going to excel beyond this and have a career that's a mid-card gimmick or a comedy gimmick, he would have to, I don't even know what they could do at this point, but he would have to turn a Kofi Kingston and say, oh, no, I'm not really from Bulgaria. I'm really from San Antonio, Texas, and I have six cows and three horses, and I love the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, that's absurd, but I think it might be the only way that you can get Rusev back into fans' minds as being more than this one-dimensional evil Russian coming in to defeat all of the good guys in America. And it's ridiculous, but I don't know what else to do with him. I know that right now the match at Fastlane is going to be a Rusev win, and then they're going to go to WrestleMania and have John Cena win. It writes itself, and I don't think there's going to be any creative liberty taken with a feud like this. I just can't see it happening. And where they go after that, I have no idea. I don't know where John Cena goes at all after any of this. It's going to be a very weird landscape after WrestleMania 31. And us speculating about it right now is almost inconsequential because there's so many guys right there on the cusp of being inserted into one area or another and given one spot or earning one separate spot or another that we can't really like see what direction the company is going to take. It's very hard to pinpoint who's going to be positioned to be successful in the next 2 weeks, let alone the next 2-3 months.
Yeah, I agree. Same thing with Cena. Like you said, even if they continue it, I think they're less likely to continue with Cena Rusev after WrestleMania because they're having a match before WrestleMania. So, yeah, you're right. I have no idea what John Cena is going to do as far as after WrestleMania goes. I mean, I don't think he's going to go back to Seth Rollins because they just had a series of matches over the last 2 months. He's not obviously going to turn heel anytime soon. So, you know, even with him, there's a lot of intrigue as far as what's happening still going into this WrestleMania and what's going to happen after, especially like we've talked about already with no part-timers at all more than likely going to be around after WrestleMania. The last two things I kind of want to bring up as far as WrestleMania goes, I guess I'll lump these two matches together because they kind of involve part-timers, is more than likely what seems pretty much locked in stone at this point is Triple H and Sting fighting at WrestleMania, and the Triple H has already called out Sting to appear at Fastlane and confront him. So it seems like the story going there is that Sting is the good guy vigilante who has seen the authority overrun the WWE, kind of similar to what happened with the NWO back during the heyday in WCW, and he seems like he's here to either end it or put a stop to it. I mean, you have to logically assume that if these two are going to fight at WrestleMania, that maybe, you know, the authority's power or their position in the WWE will be on the line. That might be the end of the authority, because there's only so much further they can go with the authority storyline. This isn't the corporation and Vince McMahon. You know, I think it's kind of running its course, and I think it almost seems logical to kind of end the story at WrestleMania. It's the simple good guy vigilante, you know, stands up to the authority thing against the mean, power-hungry boss, Triple H. And they'll fight at Mania. As much as we always talked about Sting Undertaker, I think as far as this match goes, Triple H is somebody who will be able to get a better match out of Sting and maybe work more to his, not really needs, but his style now and his age. I think they'll be able to put a good match together for both ring veterans. They'll be able to hide Sting's flaws, and Triple H will be able to work with Sting and get the high spots and get the spots they need to make the match work. So I think that story pretty much writes itself. I don't know what else there is to add to it. I think Sting is going to be there for WrestleMania. That's it. Maybe he'll show up at next year's WrestleMania too. Who knows? But I think as far as seeing Sting around afterwards, I really don't think you'll see that. Maybe he'll get to name an authority figure and that'll be it. But I don't think you'll see Sting wrestling at Extreme Rules or Payback or even SummerSlam. Maybe you could see him for SummerSlam, but I just think Sting at this age is just going to be more than happy to have one run in the WWE and make it successful and make it work. And then the other rumored match involving a part-time star is The Undertaker, and that seems to be going with Bray Wyatt. And we've talked about it before on here. I don't want to say an interesting mesh of styles. I mean, Bray Wyatt in the last couple weeks has kind of been cutting promos, and he's always been a weirdish character, not really somebody who's been the mythical power-like person like The Undertaker has, but I'd be interested to see if they do end up going through with this. And from the last word from reading online is that they still really didn't know if The Undertaker was going to be there, but you got to figure at this point with the Rumble being over, they probably have some kind of answer from The Undertaker. The Undertaker is a company guy. He's not going to sit around and wait until after Fastlane to tell them, yes or no, I'm coming back for a match with Bray Wyatt. I can do this. I mean, if it was me personally watching The Undertaker out there wrestle last year, and I know it was against somebody like Brock Lesnar, he just seemed like he was pretty much at the end of the road as far as competition goes. And I would have had no problem with him taking a year off from WrestleMania this year and having one final match next year at WrestleMania in his home state of Texas and go out there at Cowboy Stadium. I mean, if you want to fill up Cowboy Stadium, hype up The Undertaker's last match, and you'll probably get more people to show up than you normally would if it's The Undertaker's last match at WrestleMania for somebody who's had a 20-plus story-year career like he has. But I'm curious to see how they would book an Undertaker-Bray Wyatt feud going forward. Are they going to give Bray Wyatt the kind of, like, Undertaker-like powers that he's had where he can appear and not appear? I mean, he kind of does it already with the lights, but what is, you know, I just don't know how they're going to build it up. Are you going to have Bray Wyatt be this guy, you know, who comes out and kind of do what they did last year with Brock Lesnar, and every single time, or what they should have done last year with Brock Lesnar, and that just have Bray Wyatt look better and more dominant than The Undertaker in every single part of this feud? I mean, you have to think that the match at WrestleMania would see Bray Wyatt go over. I mean, you don't have The Undertaker's streak to worry about anymore. So it's not like the streak is in question. So Taker taking a loss at WrestleMania wouldn't really hurt him that much. But I'm just curious to see how to get these two to work, and with Bray Wyatt's promos and whatnot going into WrestleMania. It's just an interesting mesh of styles for me going forward. So I don't know, what do you think of those two matches, Matt, as far as Bray Wyatt, Taker, Sting, Triple H, and do you even want to see another Undertaker match at this year's WrestleMania after seeing the physical condition that he was in last year and how he came out of last year's match at WrestleMania?
Well, it's kind of funny how WrestleMania is kind of shaping up to, what was it, the card that I predicted 6 months ago? Either way, Sting Triple H kind of writes itself. I'll get into that, but Bray Wyatt Undertaker makes a lot more sense than I think you're giving it credit to. I think it's gonna play off a little bit better because it doesn't have to be physical. It doesn't have to be Brock Lesnar Undertaker. Those two have so much history just in WWE with their matches to be a physical matchup. It had to be entertaining. It had to be all in ring. It had to be shown as two guys who are going to tear each other down. Throwing in Bray Wyatt there, you're saying that this match is going to be more about the story than it's going to be about the match. It's going to be more about the spectacle. And that's what's going to save this match. Because you could have, like you said, you could have Undertaker, all his tricks and mind games and stuff that he was one of the first to really bring that on a cartoony scale and then into just an everyday thing for the WWE. To the point where he's the only one that's really allowed to do that anymore. And the only one that's allowed to do it, other one allowed to do it, is Bray Wyatt. I mean, you say he doesn't really have meniscal parts, but the turning off the lights and then appearing behind like Ambrose, or last year with having the little kids thing in the sheet masks, and the one little kid singing in demon voice at John Cena. Those are all little things that would have been done by The Undertaker, I would say, in, like, the Ministry of Dark. And now Bray Wyatt's able to do it because, it's a hell of a lot more tame than what it was in the 90s. So, I think you're going to see a lot of that. And I think that's what's going to sell this match. And that's what's going to make the match at WrestleMania interesting. Because they don't need to be ruthless. But they probably will be. Like, they don't have to hit very hard. But if they do, it's gonna make the match seem a hell of a lot better than if it was Brock Lesnar in there and you're expecting that. So having them together and having that match set, I think is very good for both guys. I think it will help The Undertaker get another great WrestleMania moment. I don't know if Bray Wyatt would win. I have a feeling that The Undertaker may win, but by disqualification, and then you might have Bray Wyatt maybe walking out of there as the one on top. Because, you could write off The Undertaker at the end of the match and say that you just say Wyatt took his soul or took him away or whatever the case may be. And there you go. And now you have a strong heel in Wyatt. There's a lot of ways to book a loss and still have him come out to be the winner, in other words. So as far as the outcome goes, that doesn't really bother me. I think spectacle and how the match will play out on television is going to be the big thing. And I'm not even saying so much Wyatt's promos, because his promos lately have been kind of rubbing me the wrong way because they've kind of all sounded the same. They've kind of all been blah. I need some more activity around the promos. So once The Undertaker signs on, or once they decide to announce that match or go forward with it, I think you'll see more specific things happening instead of just Bray Wyatt talking about the things that are going to happen. And that'll be more intriguing. Being in Triple H is what it is. It is the best match that you can have if you want things to have a match in the WWE. With somebody from his quote-unquote generation, Triple H is probably the last guy that could hold his own and have the match be good. And I tell people this all the time. Right? A lot of people give Triple H a lot of shit. But he is easily one of the best wrestlers in our generation, probably one of the best wrestling minds that we've ever seen. And putting him in the ring with Sting is a no-brainer. The one issue is, and it's something that I have a little bit of an issue with, is that it's going to be Sting as the conquering hero saving the WWE when he's a WCW guy. I don't care whatever WWE wants to say or how they want to market it, Sting is always going to be looked at as a WCW guy. It's obvious. He was the franchise. He stayed until the very last day the company closed. He refused to sign with WWE for years. For a decade, he refused to sign. Over a decade. So, it's 15 years almost. Almost 15 years he refused to sign with WWE. And that man's going to come in and be the savior and the vigilante or whatever you want to call him. To bring the authority down. It doesn't really make sense in that aspect. And I'm sure they'll reveal it that it's Vince McMahon or it's somebody who has a vested interest in it and they have Sting doing their bidding or working with him or whatever it may be. But that's still a WCW guy that's standing up for the WWE. It doesn't make sense to me. Hell, it would make more sense having Hulk Hogan do it. Even that would be weird. That would be really weird. But because it's Sting, everybody's like, yeah, we get to finally see him. And it's just, I don't know. It seems wrong. But it's the best option for everybody. I think it'll be a decent match at WrestleMania. And it'll be done. I have no idea where they'll go from there. I think we'll be looking at some sort of on-air character being a retired wrestler, some sort of authority figure, or maybe a face turn for Stephanie, because I don't think they'll go with a face turn for Triple H if he's just going to lose the thing like the night before, and they have to go with somebody for Raw. So they have to go something. They have to get somebody out there that has some sort of respect in the fans' eyes, but isn't too jaded by the current product and isn't too oversaturated in the fans' mind. And right now, pretty much everybody on TV is. So it'd be interesting who they throw in there. Sting is not the right one. He's never been a promo guy. If you watch TNA when he was in charge, he should not be an authority figure. My wife and I were joking because we were saying that when we went to the Rumble, I was telling her, I was like, well, there's not really anybody that you haven't seen yet. And, oh, no, you saw Sting. Or you haven't seen Sting. And, oh, no, we saw him in TNA. Oh, yeah, he didn't have any paint on. He had glasses. Yeah, no, that was Steve Borden. That wasn't Sting. And I was like, well, you never seen Hogan. Nope, we saw Hogan in TNA, too. Yeah, that was sad. So, thinking about that and seeing it kind of fades away from your memory, even though that was the first time you'd ever really see him in person, it doesn't bode well for his staying power at this stage of his career. I remember when I was a kid, and I think it was 1991, seeing him in the New Haven Coliseum from the skybox and seeing him in the pink tights. And I remember that thing more than I saw the one at TNA. Like, I remember seeing him and he was in a street fight, I think, with, like, Bunkhouse Buck or something. Like, that's how vividly I remember that compared to seeing Sting in 2010 in TNA when I was 10 rows away from him when he's cutting a promo. That's saying something. So... I don't want to see him on screen more than he has to be. I'm glad that he's in the WWE. I'm glad that he's getting his rightful place in history. But he's not a WWE guy. He shouldn't be a focal point of the WWE power struggle. And I'm just kind of waiting for it to kind of subside. And you know this is where they're going with the storyline and with the match. So, okay, cool. Let's get through it. And maybe we'll have some cool segments and we'll have a decent match of Mania and then we can move on from there and get him into the Hall of Fame. And that'll be good enough for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you said, they'll do something that will kind of, you know, try to make sense out of Sting being the person to, you know, end the terrible reign of the Authority, even though he hasn't been a WWE guy. I'm sure they'll try to do something to make it work. I think otherwise the match will be fine, like you said. I agree pretty much Triple H is the right guy to get the good match out of him, and then we'll just move forward from there with another new Authority figure, and they'll just recycle, and we'll keep getting new Authority figures till they end. Moving on now from WrestleMania, there's a couple other quick points I wanted to talk about. Obviously, we'll be talking about the build-up to WrestleMania in the coming weeks on the show. I'm sure there'll be a lot of developments going forward on different Raws and SmackDowns. Probably just Raw. But on SmackDown this past Thursday, Triple H mentioned some kind of announcement that will shake the WWE to its core. And we've seen this before with them where they hype up big announcements and they end up being something not as big as they promised. There really hasn't been much speculation or much, like, people, sources, Reddit, Mets fan, Reddit, anybody that knows, has says what it is, this is going to be so far. So people are just kind of throwing out ideas. One thing, especially because the front page of WWE.com pretty much makes it seem like it's about Roman Reigns, my guess would be that they'll do something where Triple H says that The Rock helps Roman Reigns win the Royal Rumble, and they'll end up doing something where Roman Reigns has to put his Royal Rumble or WrestleMania main event shot on the line at Fastlane, because you have to assume Brock Lesnar isn't going to be at Fastlane. They need to sell something to make people want to care about Fastlane. They need to have some kind of big stipulation added to a match to make people care about it. So this is probably the way they're going to go about doing this. What they end up doing, I don't know. I mean, you can't do what they did in, what, the 97, where they did a Final Four Battle Royal, because Rusev's already in another match. And if they end up doing something like Roman Reigns against Big Show and Kane, that match is just going to get absolutely crapped on. Nobody wants to see Roman Reigns fight Big Show and Kane for a WrestleMania spot. Nobody in their right mind, even internet fans, are going to think Big Show or Kane are going to walk away from this and end up winning the match and main eventing WrestleMania. So they've kind of put themselves in a little bit of a corner here as far as this announcement, where they need to make it seem big, but if they do something like Roman Reigns against Big Show and Kane, nobody's going to really care about it or want to even see that match, because nobody's going to even think for 1 second Roman Reigns isn't main eventing WrestleMania. My one thought about it, and because it's something I always trumpet and want to bring back, only if Raw goes down to 2 hours, was that maybe it'd be a brand split, and then they crown a new world champion before WrestleMania, and then Roman Reigns gets to pick who he wants to face at WrestleMania. But I don't think that's going to happen, and that's not the right way to bring back the brand split whatsoever. That should be something that should be saved for after WrestleMania. But what do you think, Matt, as far as this announcement? What do you think will happen? What do you think it's going to be about? And if it's something like Roman Reigns putting his WrestleMania title shot on the line, do you think it'll be even something that's worth it?
I have no idea. I think... excuse me, God. My chest is trying to run away from me right now. I think it has to do with Roman Reigns. Triple H blatantly said it has to do with the Rumble, and in fact, they said he watched the Rumble and saw what happened. Now, that could mean two things. I mean, one, technically The Rock didn't help him beat Big Show or Kane. He tossed them both out before The Rock was involved. So, can't really say anything about that. Like you said, there's already a match set up for Rusev. Can't really do anything about that. The only thing I can really think about is maybe he was talking about either the title match and maybe they'll do the Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, and then whoever wins that gets a shot at WrestleMania. I think that would be a good way to incorporate Rollins, who's not going to have anybody to face. Get those two into a match for a shot at WrestleMania. And then at WrestleMania, with my prediction, is Reigns winning and then Rollins coming in, cashing in, and walking away with the championship. So it kind of plays into my favor as well. But there's got to be a reason why he said, I watched. He's like, I didn't. We know he saw the match because he came out at the end of the match and stared down The Rock. So there's got to be something else in there, too, about Seth Rollins. I mean, he is the Authority's golden boy. He had a fantastic performance at WrestleMania, which the Authority has not or at Royal Rumble, which the Authority has not mentioned whatsoever. There's been no talk about him at all. Everybody's been very quiet. So I have a feeling that's where this is going to slip in a little bit. You're going to see him call out Reigns or whatever and say, I'm not taking away your shot, but there's somebody else that proved to me at the Royal Rumble that he deserves a WWE championship shot as well, a one-on-one shot as well, and that's Seth Rollins, and they have them go off and face that fast lane. One way for the Authority to dig it to Reigns, it's a way to get Rollins on the show where she didn't have it, Reigns have a match where she didn't have it, Big Show and Kane in Rollins' corner, and there you go, you have your two veterans out there. That ties in with the Rumble and the whole Authority angle for that. I was surprised they rushed Rollins out there at the end of the Rumble. But with how it's been played out now, this is the only direction I can see it going. Any other way, I think you're going to be falling into a too convoluted of a story. And also, you don't want to have a Big Show or Kane anywhere close to having a shot at the championship at WrestleMania. There's no way that they can be in the conversation for it without people just writing off this WrestleMania as a WrestleMania 9 fiasco and just tuning in next year at 32. So I think that's the way they're going to go. I think that's the safest way for them to go. It will be the most intriguing because you have Rollins, who has proven he is ready, and he can't have a match with Lesnar and be very good. So if you have him win at Fastlane, it will be very good. If you have Reigns win at Fastlane, that's what everybody expects. So people are going to be expecting that, too. It puts a lot of doubt in people's minds. So I think that'll be the itch in another way for the Authority to kind of stick it to Paul Heyman as well, to show that they still have the power. I think that's what you're going to be looking at the beginning of all this. Right.
Yeah, and maybe they even do something, too, where they add the fact that maybe The Rock gets added to Roman Reigns' corner, and if Rock can't appear at WrestleMania, you have him appear at Fastlane to try to get people interested. So The Rock appears at Fastlane to set maybe something up at WrestleMania, who knows, or you can use it as the return of Randy Orton, and if you want to do Randy Orton, Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, you bring Orton back at Fastlane to screw over Rollins and the Authority, and then you set up the Rollins-Orton at WrestleMania. So if they do that, like I said, I think I like it. They'll have a lot of things to play off of, and they can set up different programs for WrestleMania going forward, and hopefully at the same time maybe try to get some fans back over to Roman Reigns' side, even though I don't know if that's going to work. I can see you're struggling over there, Matt. The last thing I wanted to bring up today was the after Raw tonight, the Triple H interview on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast. We saw what happened with Vince McMahon's podcast when he did it, or with Vince McMahon when he was on Stone Cold's podcast. I thought that was a pretty good show. You know, Stone Cold didn't really throw any softballs at him. He brought up CM Punk. He brought up things like Macho Man. He brought up guys like Cesaro. And I think even this time with Triple H, I think Triple H might be more willing to answer. I mean, Vince answered them, but sometimes he kind of seems like he wasn't going full boat into things. I think Triple H is somebody who'd be more willing to do that. I mean, I'm pretty sure Austin will bring up the Rumble. He'll bring up Daniel Bryan. He'll bring up, the fans voicing their criticisms about Bryan not winning the match. So I'll be interested to see what kind of take we get from Triple H on it. Like I think Triple H would be somebody who's going to be more willing to give answers, like straight to the point answers, and not afraid to hold his point, not afraid to give his reasons for it. Triple H doesn't really care about backlash from the internet. He actually does a really good job of trolling internet fans a lot on TV, on Twitter, on interviews, wherever he does them. So I'm interested to see this after Raw tonight. Matt, like I said, I know you're struggling over. This is the last thing I wanted to bring up. Whether I don't know if you have anything else you want to talk about, but what are you looking forward to tonight's interview? Do you expect Triple H to be more forthcoming and more open about certain answers and guys than maybe Vince McMahon was? And what are you just your overall thoughts?
I think it's going to be different from Vince's. What's going to be interesting, and it's probably going to come off right off the bat, and we're probably going to know pretty early on in the interview. Not if he's going to answer hard questions or not, but what stance is he going to take as far as claiming responsibility for certain decisions, or is he going to say, which is probably what is the true stance of saying we. And we as a creative team, or we as a company, decided to go with so forth, so on and so forth. There's two problems. If he does go in that direction, he's going to get some criticism from it. A lot of people are going to say that he's trying to hide behind somebody else, or he's trying to pass the buck to somebody, and not claiming responsibility for anything. But it's also true. So that's the hard part. It is a creative decision, and it does come down to a creative team. And I mean, eventually, it comes down to Vince McMahon and what he decides. So that's why the podcast with Stephen Vince was more telling, because yes, he is where the buck stops. He might have some thoughts and some ideas and some insight onto how decisions were made, but they weren't really his decisions. And I'm afraid that there's going to be a lot of fans who don't feel that way and might see it as him trying to chicken out of something. And he might not be able to answer some questions if they go that route, because it's not his area. It's not his fault, to quote Chief Whiskey. When they said that this was the next Steve Austin interview for WWE, on one hand, it made a lot of sense. He's the next guy that WWE or on the hierarchy that fans want to hear from as far as behind the scenes go. But on the other hand, it was, you've got Vince McMahon. Who else are you going to talk to? There's no one else that, one, can give you a more entertaining interview, and two, can answer any more questions than Vince can. Triple H can't answer questions that Vince can't, and Triple H can't speak for Vince. So if you're asking for decisions about why he did something, or why Roman Reigns was chosen over Daniel Bryan, he's not going to tell you, and he can't. And even if he was going to, he can't read Vince's mind and say this was the overwhelming reason why he chose to go with him. Because then he's passing the buck again. It's a no-win for him if he says something like that. So I hope in one aspect they talk a little bit more about NXT, a little bit more about how the roster is developing, and we don't get another one of those brass ring comments, and hopefully Triple H says something about there's all these guys that are grabbing that brass ring and are becoming huge stars down there that are ready to just take over. I hope that's kind of the route they go with it. And I hope they talk a little bit more about his career. We've never really had any sort of interview with Triple H's wrestling career. I mean, he's had a lot of matches with a lot of legends, and we haven't heard very much about any of it. And his matches with Shawn Michaels, his matches with Ric Flair, he's wrestled some of the greatest of all time, Steve Austin, The Rock, anybody you can think of he's been in the ring with. So get him on there and talk about some of these great rivalries, and you would have a very entertaining podcast. I'm sure that's not the way they're going to go with it, because that's, I guess, a little more old wrestling fan for them compared to who they're trying to cater to now. But you got to kind of stay away from, like, the big picture stuff, because it's not his call yet. When it is his call and he's the one, and him and Stephanie are the ones that are making the final decision, I get it. Right now, it's not to that point yet. So I'm curious to see where they go with the interview, but I'm not really expecting any, like, bombshells like how it was when Vince McMahon was on.
All right, do you have anything else you wanted to bring up with Matt, or are you good from over there?
I am barely hanging on by a thread, so I think I'm good for tonight.
All right, well, that was our show for tonight. We will presumably be back next Monday. We'll talk about the podcast, the Triple H Stone Cold podcast, talk about whatever Triple H's big announcement was, and continue to talk about our road to WrestleMania. So, for my co-host, Matt Herrick, I am your host for tonight, Justin Cerwanka, signing off from the HCC Wrestling Podcast, and we will see you next Monday.